Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with the executive editor of Newsbusters, your host, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome to the latest can opening of Newsbuster Gusto. It's a little empty on the highways and in our hallways, but we still have the latest. We take you now to the dark doings of the Supreme Court. MSNBC's Joy Reid warned on Thursday night their ruling on Arizona's voting rules was another violent blow to democracy.
In a 6-3 ruling written by Samuel Alito, the most reliably conservative justice, the Supreme Court dealt another violent blow against democracy by upholding two restrictive Arizona voting laws, forbidding the collection of absentee ballots by anyone other than family or caregivers, and allowing the tossing of ballots inadvertently cast in the wrong precinct. Sadly, the conservative decision shows you just how central the big lie has become to Republican orthodoxy. What's far more troubling is what this decision means for future cases before the courts. According to Alito, states can pretty much do whatever they want to suppress the vote, as long as they don't make it obvious.
To drop out some of the legal jargon here, Alito's standard is basically, as long as you don't say the N-word, when you are taking away people's votes, it is fine.
So states can do whatever they want? This is supposedly the problem? You could just as easily flip this the other way and say, what Joy Reid wants is for voters to be able to do whatever they want. Show up the wrong polling place? Whatever. Collect 67 votes and show up at the polls with them? Sure. To me, this whole idea that something's a violent blow to democracy when your side loses, it's like if we had a discussion about how to change the rules of football, and then any rule change was like, obviously the other side wants to destroy football. It is kind of interesting that anything that they even claim has a disproportionate impact is somehow intentionally racist. Ali Mistal is trying to suggest that Sam Alito is so evil, he's basically just saying, just don't say the N-word. Everything else is acceptable. This is just cringy imagination or some sort of narcotic stupor. It's not journalism. And of course, Joy Reid suggests we're closer to Jim Crow now than to the civil rights era. Joy Reid will not be attacked by fact checkers because you can say the Republicans are Jim Crow and they all go, eh. Also on MSNBC, Chris Hayes went there too on Thursday night. On screen were the words Republicans against democracy. The entire conservative movement is radicalizing on the notion of denying voters of color.
Now, we know those provisions have a disparate impact across racial lines. They ran the numbers. They found that tossing ballots cast to the wrong precinct has the effect of disproportionately undercounting minority votes by a factor of 2-1. Allowing someone else to drop off a ballot is particularly important for indigenous communities in Arizona. But today, the Supreme Court's conservative majority said all that stuff is fine. And I could give you the legal reasoning, but here's the real reasoning. It's because they and all other parts of the right are working in tandem against America's multiracial democracy.
It's funny that the liberals would say the conservatives, all their arguments about the bias of the media are bad faith arguments. You know, it's a bad faith argument to say when you suggest that you don't like ballot harvesting or you don't like people's voting in the wrong precincts. Well, what if you voted in the wrong precinct and the right precinct? But somehow the Republicans are against democracy. Also, we had a rip-roaring story out of Politico, believe it or not. Kamala Harris was being condemned from inside her own office with those conveniently anonymous sources. Simone Sanders denounced them as cowards. Well, this could pretty much be something you could uniformly state about sources who choose to go anonymous. Perhaps the range of cowardice is lower or higher, but it's certainly not gutsy to be an anonymous source. Political Reports with three reporters. Quote, in interviews, 22 current and former vice presidential aides, administration officials, and associates of Harris and Biden described a tense and at times dour office atmosphere. We even heard people feel treated like spit. You know what I'm saying. What's amazing here is the networks just can't find time for this. You know, Scott Whitlock wrote it up for us that the morning shows had time about what do you need to do for your bug bites? What are your travel options for the holidays? But we can't do the steaming hot story about how people inside Kamala Harris's office can't stand her. This is one of those things where you kind of look at this and you say, or at least I would say, I sort of thought in 2019, as the presidential campaign was kicking in, that Kamala Harris had all the potential to be the female Obama. And at this point, you're getting a much stronger sense that she's becoming the black Hillary Clinton. On The View, they were telling the anonymous sources to grow a pair. And Sonny Hostin was suggesting this story happened because Kamala is a woman of color. So what, Politico now is racist and sexist? Kamala's own staff, or Biden, or other aides, associates, are all racist and sexist? This is just the kind of story we all know that the networks would have been extremely excited to get if it was about Trump. Any kind of insider dirt about people hating Trump or feeling they're treated like junk, they would run around and do that story and be very excited about it. The top of the story, the top of the newspapers on Friday were all about the prosecution of the Trump Organization. The Washington Post had a big banner headline at the top that read, "Prosecutors allege fraud at Trump firm." Big story, four reporters. Two aren't enough, three aren't enough, we need four. The lead of the story said only, quote-unquote, prosecutors were charging the former president. Right before the jump to inside the paper, there's a quote about Trump's allegedly sweeping and audacious illegal payment scheme, said a prosecutor for Manhattan District Attorney Cyrus Vance. D in parentheses. That's what you're going to get. That is pretty much the extent of the acknowledgement that the prosecutor here is a D. Not just a D, but an elected D. There's also in the Washington Post on the front page a news analysis by Big Josh Dawsey. The headline, "Indictments Become Trump's Latest Rallying Cry." These two stories and a third story on Trump giving House Democrats a peek at his finances take up most of page A8 and page A9. They just can't get enough. The only real rebuttal in the Post came from the Trump team crying witch hunt. There's no really no critic outside of the Trump orbit. I think a lot of times they like to have stories where it's just the earnest, non-ideological prosecutors against Trump crying witch hunt, and they figure that Trump kind of discredits himself. That's the way they hope it is taken. At the top of the New York Times, the headline, "Trump's business charged in quote-unquote audacious tax scheme." It's not a risky tax scheme, as Al Gore used to say. It's an audacious tax scheme. And then the subhead, "Prosecutors described 15 years of hiding executives' luxury perks and bonuses." Once again, three reporters on this one. Two are not enough. The Times also has a new news analysis on the Trump prosecution. It is titled, "Striking at Heart of Ex-President's Image." Like the Times always portrayed Trump as some kind of straight shooter? and Honest Abe of the real estate set. These two stories from the Times engulf all of page A12. There's no ads on it. It's all copy, headlines, and photos on A12. Again, the only rebuttal was Trump's. Although they quoted the Trump's organization claim in a statement that criminal cases centered on fringe benefits were extremely rare. And then the Times trio admitted, indeed, lawyers with expertise in tax crimes told the Times they could think of no recent example in a criminal case. So here in paragraph 27, we learn that this prosecution of Trump is extremely rare. There's no other recent example. But we can't quite explain why then would we single out just this one guy who was the Republican president who might run again, and we're all elected Democrats in a Democrat city. There's kind of a storyline missing in there. There was no D on the front page for DA Cyrus Vance. This is the son of Cyrus Vance, Jimmy Carter, Secretary of State, who resigned from the Carter administration because Jimmy Carter was too muscular. I kid you not. Now, in graph 29 of the Times story, they call Vance, quote, a Democrat who twice beat Mr. Trump at the U.S. Supreme Court in a battle to obtain the former president's tax records, unquote. Late in the piece, the Times notes Vance is not seeking re-election to the DA's office. So this, quote, will arguably be the most enduring part of his legacy. If you spend a lot of time studying the legacy of Manhattan district attorneys, I think it's safe to ask, is this going to really matter? Is this prosecution going to actually accomplish anything other than the massive headlines and the big stories? You can see right here in a story on Wikipedia, they explain, on March 13, 2019, Cyrus Vance filed 16 indictments charging mortgage fraud against Paul Manafort, former chairman of Trump's 2016 presidential campaign. I'm sure in 2019, this was a front page story in the newspapers. And the follow-up, these charges were subsequently dismissed by a judge. In other words, they didn't go anywhere. You got the whole Ray Donovan thing here from the Reagan years. Where do you go to get your reputation back? Except they've spent their entire time destroying Trump's reputation, and it doesn't really matter whether you actually succeed in prosecuting. It's all about disparaging and negativity and bad headlines. That's what it's all about. So, who is Cyrus Vance Jr.? He was elected in 2009 with 91% of the vote in the Democrat primary. And as we know in New York City, that pretty much, that's it. You're not going to be elected as a Republican. Democrats who endorsed Cyrus Vance Jr. at the time included former Mayor David Dinkins, feminazi Gloria Steinem, Caroline Kennedy, and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Oh, wait. Did young Cy come out against all vaccines? USA Today did this too. On the front page, headline, charges muddy Trump's future. Three reporters again. As Donald Trump continues to dangle the possibility of a 2024 presidential run, a testament to his ironclad grip on the Republican Party, his legal future became more uncertain and more complicated Thursday after prosecutors, no party, announced tax fraud charges against his namesake company and a loyal executive. New York prosecutors accused the Trump Organization of a years-long tax fraud scheme. This entire thing bleeds onto most of page 6A. Once again, no real mention in the USA Today story that Cyrus Vance is a Democrat and an elected Democrat. It really is amazing. This is the way the news media does it. Just the way the news media pretends they're objective, fair, and balanced and nonpartisan. When prosecutors who are elected Democrats go after Trump, well, they're just presented as, quote unquote, prosecutors. How convenient. How helpful. We'll have more after this.
MRC-store.com.
Pro-gun, pro-life, pro-God, and pro-America? Welcome to the Pro Shop.
MRC-store.com.
T-shirts, hoodies, goodies, and much more.
MRC-store.com.
The only store that always offers conservatives more.
That's MRC-store.com.
Log on, log in, and help the Media Research Center while shopping for great gear today.
MRC-store.com.
So the holiday weekend made me think back on all the news busting we've been doing here at the Media Research Center, from President Ronald Reagan to Joe Biden. So I decided for the long weekend to open up the dusty binder of our old monthly newsletter, Media Watch. You know, it used to be we were on a really slacker schedule, if you think about it. We had 4 weeks to do an 8-page newsletter. Now, in the Newsbusters era, it's like, get it going, get it going, get it going. Can you get it up in an hour? Get it posted. Get the video. Get the transcript. It's much faster. Now, the archive of Media Watch can be accessed if you're a nerd. We applaud nerds. You can search on Google with the term MRC Media Watch Archive. That should bring it up. So here's a few little tidbits from 30 years ago from the July 1991 issue. If you're old, this will be a trip down memory lane. If you're young, you'll be like, what is this? Well, the big story 30 years ago, Thurgood Marshall retired from the Supreme Court. The networks hailed him as legendary, a legal giant, and a fabled torchbearer for civil rights. Well, Thurgood Marshall as an attorney before he was a Supreme Court justice was a fabled torchbearer for civil rights. But what about his tenure at the Supreme Court? You know, nobody's going to come on at ABC or CBS and say he was a longtime liberal hack partisan, because that's not what they do. Actually, being a liberal hack partisan is the same thing as being for civil rights. On the CBS Evening News, Charles Kuralt reported, "Justice Marshall, the sturdy old champion of individual rights, has grown increasingly lonely as a member of the dwindling liberal minority." Liberals, they're the individual rights group, okay? Conservatives, they're not for freedom. In another commentary, CBS's Bruce Morton chastised the court's nanny conservatism. He said, "The Rehnquist court is much more concerned with the rights of government, the state, authority." This was the spin at the time. Think about this. Justice Clarence Thomas was nominated, and their whole spin at the time was, well, Justice Clarence Thomas isn't going to be for freedom. He's not going to be for individual rights. Really? The Thomas nomination forced each of the networks to air at least one story discussing the existence of black conservatives. What? That's a thing? There was no balance by the networks on abortion. They were very concerned about this. CBS This Morning brought on Faye Waddleton, who was the head of Planned Parenthood at the time, a woman of color. Today devoted a segment to Kate Michelman of the National Abortion Rights Action League, now known as NARAL Pro-Choice America. NBC Nightly News granted an unusual live interview to Patricia Ireland, the vice president of the National Organization for Women, or NOW. So then, what about all the people who are against abortion? Did they all get interviews? No. There was no time for that. There was only time to interview abortion advocates worrying about their ability to get abortions. In our News Bites section of Media Watch, where we had the shorter bits, we can see some things never change. The networks touted America as a pro-choice country. ABC reporter Cokie Roberts claimed on World News Tonight, President Bush, that's George H.W. Bush, we're here in 1991. President Bush must also worry about anti-abortion activists who have given the Republican Party so much support in the past. He's promised to veto this and all other bills supporting abortion rights, and Congress is unlikely to override, meaning the president could win every battle on abortion rights, but create problems for fellow Republicans come Election Day. At the time, they were always suggesting that being pro-life was going to hurt you politically. Over on NBC, correspondent Henry Champ, that fine Canadian, on the Nightly News said, "Polls indicate Americans are pro-choice. They want or support the right to decide. It's never the right to abort. It's the right to choose." In an interview with Washington Times media reporter Don Coit back in 91, then ABC News White House reporter Britt Hume dared to say, "A great many reporters are liberal." Hume offered some examples. Take the Kemp-Roth tax cut. That's the Reagan tax cut of 81. That was regarded by reporters I knew on Capitol Hill as being out there along with the Bermuda Triangle and getting a telephone call from Elvis. Hume also said, "I'm constantly hearing reporters say, well, Bush says he wants to be the education president, but he doesn't come up with any money." In other words, they're starting from the premise that the best way to advance the cause of education is to spend a lot of money on it. This is exactly what happened with George W. Bush in 2001, who also ran as a pro-education guy, and who also, you know, the Ted Kennedys of the world suggested he was not going to be a great education president unless he did everything the Democrats wanted him to do. Some things never change. A final thought on the 4th of July. This should always be an occasion to demonstrate our love and appreciation for the United States of America. But the media can be pretty terrible at expressing any patriotism. No flag pins for them. We'll have content over the weekend underlining their distaste with the patriotic parade. One exception is how deeply liberal PBS puts on this annual big shindig of a concert called A Capitol Fourth, live from the National Mall. It's pretty funny that I can be listening in the afternoon to the Dan Bongino show here in the Rush Limbaugh slot in D.C. on WMAL-FM. And here comes a commercial. PBS is advertising its 4th of July special to all the right-wing crazy ditto heads. So I'd say enjoy the concert if you turn over to PBS. Just know, this is a pretty dramatic contrast with the network where Bill Moyers used to compare wearing a flag pin to being a fan of the Chinese Communist Party and carrying around Mao's little red book. The concert is a dramatic exception to the rule at PBS. So we wish you happy Independence Day. We will keep the lights on here at Newsbusters. You can check us out once, twice, 24 times a day. Thanks for listening.